the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, the one thing that we know for certain in life are death and taxes. And so that is going to be one of the subjects we're going to cover today, estate taxes. There are laws out there that sunset in 2025, but some of those estate tax laws could change in 2021 with a new administration. Let's find out what you should be doing regarding your estate plan. Joining me on the program is Kevin Day. He's a nationally recognized author and a leading estate planning and international asset protection attorney. He is co-author of 4 books, great ones on lawsuits, taxes, and asset protection, offshore money strategies. Kevin, welcome to the program. I want to begin with the estate tax laws as they currently exist. The exemption is somewhere around $11.5 million. The tax rate's 40%. But Kevin, that sunsets in 2025, and that was assuming they would remain in place, which is unlikely with the new administration. So let's talk about that, and what should people be doing regarding their estate plan?
Yes, and you don't have to be a huge estate. What's great and a little bit funny, this is an inside funny for your clients and listeners, is that I have people that I'll be working with, and sometimes I'll neglect to ask the question at the very beginning, how large is your estate? And so during the conversation, they're talking about, oh, you know, we're too small. We're really small for what you're normally working with. And, it ends up that they have $25 million estate. And then I also have others that are saying, you know, we've worked really hard. We have these businesses. We have a rental. And, they're making a good amount of money for their an income and a little bit of savings, but it really only adds up to, you know, $3 or $4 million. And unlike many people in kind of our space on the estate planning side, we don't have too many competitors nationwide on the lawsuit protection and privacy side. But we don't say, oh, we're not going to talk to somebody if they're not $10 million or above, or $15 million and above. Luckily, we are very successful, and we have a mission to help people in their estate and against lawyers. So we have some little grandma that just has a little home that was bought down in La Mesa, California after World War II for $15,000. Well, now it is $800,000, and that's really valuable to them. The problem right now is with the sunset, for Bush to have gotten that passed, he had to put a sunset in it, and that's 2025, and so our 11.5 million will go back to 5 million. And that's going to traumatize people right now that said, oh, you know, we're only, let's take an individual as an example rather than a married couple. Well, we're at 6-7 million, so we're okay. We don't have to worry about this now. We can deal with strategies later, and the law is going to change, and so we'll deal with that later, not thinking of the change being for the worse rather than the better. And so instantly in 2025, they're going to have $2 million or $3 million is going to be given to Uncle Sam. And you say 40%, that's not including state taxes. So if you want to round up, simple number, if you had $3 million, $1.5 million is not going to your heirs. It's going to the government. So you want to presume that you're going to live past 2025, and you need a gifting strategy now while you can take care of it. The IRS today would grandfather any gifts that were made beforehand. The second part of your question is Biden has already said that they're going to target it, and they're talking about 3 million. And that's in there. There's so many more things. We could probably lecture just about this. So I'm going to cap it there so we can flesh things out.
Okay, so assuming that the tax laws are going to change, we saw that with George W. Bush. His estate taxes sunsetted in 2010. President Trump's will sunset in 2025. You know, what do you do, Kevin, when you get new administrations, whether it's Bush, whether it's Trump, whether it's Biden, and they put their own stamp and change the tax laws? So how can you, I guess, put in a estate plan that's going to be flexible enough to allow you to handle any changes that come? Because every president seems to want to change the tax laws.
Well, in your normal revocable living trust, you know, your, you know, $2,500 or, you know, $3,000 living trust, you want it as open as possible. You don't want any defects. So our objective is to have our clients come and revisit things every 4 or so years. And it shouldn't be revisiting our document. It should be revisiting, oh, we have another grandchild, or several of our children are wealthier than we are. So we're going to skip them and go down to the next generation. Those are the sorts of things most estate planners want to visit every year, but they shouldn't be revisiting their document. They should know what's in the document. And if things change or are anticipated to change, we should be reaching out to you and say, hey, this is on the horizon. This is what your trust currently says. And here's some provisions that are affected. And we have a patch for it, and it's $300. And these are the ramifications. Do you want it, or do you want to come in and discuss it? So we're very happy with the way we've drafted our revocable living trusts. And we put those same provisions, obviously, in the lawsuit protection trust as well. But you really need to be a little bit more alert with this particular change in law on 2025, because we know if you're, you know, a younger, let's say, person or family, and the husband and wife already are at, let's say, 7 million, and they're in their late 30s or 40s, they've had some success in their businesses or real estate investments, they're going to say, oh, I'm still below gift tax exemption, so I don't need to do anything. And we'd say, no, one, under the rule of 72, you know, it's going to double in a very short amount of your lifetime, and you're going to have problems. So our job as estate planners is to really organize your affairs so you can control assets, you can get the income off of assets, but the technical ownership are in your heir's name, but typically through a trust, because you don't want to, if you give it outright to them, it would have to be a pretty ironclad contract to keep control of it, and you determine what income you get out of those assets. But creating an irrevocable, essentially an intentionally defective grantor trust that's irrevocable, so it is effective for the gift tax purposes, but its defect is that you get all of the tax benefits and issues so that you balance it against your larger estate, presuming that you're wealthier than your children. But you can also control it as managers and get paid in a variety of ways. As a manager, we can also do a type of annuity with the transfer, not a commercial annuity, but a private annuity where you have a legal right to get large incomes for the rest of your life. So the planning is there that you don't have to give up control, but get the advantage. And even within that trust, we can give flexibility to skip generations or make it a dynasty trust, a dynasty provisions in it. So if the estate is large enough or is going to continue to grow, it can go for many, many generations.
Kevin, let's talk about another type of trust. It's called an asset protection trust. Obviously, we live in a very litigious society. But the reason I want to bring this up is a lot of businesses are concerned if they open up, employees come back to work, they could be held liable, like in California, if they were to get COVID. Explain an asset protection trust. How does it work, and who does it apply to?
We in the U.S. have the unfortunate situation where we have 94% of all the world's lawsuits. So lawsuit abuse is real. There's attorneys that are encouraging it. They hire people where you repave, re-black your parking lot, and they take pictures the one day when everything is blacked, but you have the signs for handicap parking and such, but you don't have the paint on because you're waiting for the blacktop to dry, and they will send demand letters saying that you're not in compliance. And they keep it low enough that the battle to fight it, you know, it's just a despicable part of the underbelly of attorneys. And so we're the attorney that wants to protect you from all of those attorneys and people that think it's a lotto system. And people have been encouraged in our society, oh, they're a business owner or they are a landlord. They must be billionaires and they have insurance. They, you know, my little lawsuit for $1 million isn't going to hurt them because I burnt my arm on the heater or something like that. It's really despicable. So, and then you add the example that you did that, you know, people, I need to come back to work. I need to come back to work, or I want to eat out. I want to eat out. And then I get Corona. So I'm going to sue you because it must've been your employees in the restaurant, or it must've been, you know, your maintenance person that brought it to my house when they were fixing something I was complaining about here. And and employees as well that, you know, even though I'm demanding I need to come back to work to make my rent, if I get Corona, it's because you made me go back into the office or into the workplace. So what asset protection trusts do, lawsuit protection trusts, they're irrevocable trusts, but unlike the trusts for the last how many decades, where the only way to get a lawsuit-proof trust was, which is a separate owner from you, was to give it away to your heirs in advance, like we were talking about the gifting trusts for your heirs. You give it to them, even though you don't own it anymore, you can have use of it, the income, but you don't own the assets, the children do, or your grandchildren through this trust. Starting with the Hague Convention, which the U.S. signed in 1985, the U.S. said, oh, U.S. persons can set up trusts in other countries, and that law will prevail. It will be the law of the land here, and we will respect that trust law, even if it's diametrically opposed to the U.S. trust law. And so starting in the early 90s, it kind of got out to entrepreneurs, oh, I can set up these offshore trusts. Not that they really wanted offshore jurisdictions. They wanted an irrevocable trust, which means it's lawsuit proof, even if the other side knows about it, that I can put all my good stuff in, my home, my accounts, my rentals, because my business is where I'm concerned with customers or the way the products or services have a danger to them or my employees, that I won't lose my home and my rentals and my portfolio. So I can name myself as the beneficiary. And that was the offshore trust that started it all. And then in 1997, U.S. states, starting with Alaska, passed copycat laws. There's only 15 states that have passed such laws. Only 8 of them have teeth in them. Your listeners and clients are all over the United States, but I know that you have a good share in California. California is not one of those states and never will be. But because of the U.S. Constitution, fair faith and credit between the states, people in the state of California can form a trust in, you know, South Dakota or Nevada or Alaska. And that law will be usable, and it's a lot less expensive than offshore.
Kevin, let's move on to offshore trust. And, you know, there was a time where a lot of individuals had money offshore in Switzerland, and then the U.S. went after money that was in Switzerland. Are offshore trust as valid today, and do they protect you as they once did from privacy or even from lawsuits? In other words, what would be the advantage of having an offshore trust?
Yes. So we're talking about two very different things. A tax advantage where you're avoiding. Avoiding is legal. Evasion is not. So having accounts offshore that you're not reporting when there's a reporting requirement, that's tax evasion. But having assets abroad, you know, if you're filing the forms, what we want to do is I like my lifestyle. I like being with my family. I'm not going to advise any of my clients to do things that are going to harm me or my lifestyle. What we want to do is beat the system at its own game. We want to be completely compliant. Now, most of the time, from an asset protection point of view, we're recommending that you don't want offshore accounts, because there is, having a trust does have a filing form. It's called a 3520, and it's like a K-1. The trust itself doesn't pay any taxes, doesn't do any filings other than this 3520 that says that it exists. And anything that that offshore trust owns is put on your Schedule E. And so the offshore trust for lawsuit protection are disregarded for taxes. So what we're doing is importing foreign law, not really exporting assets. And most people, most of the world believes that the U.S. is the safest country in the world. So foreigners are trying to get their assets into the U.S. for lawsuit protection purposes from their world, mostly not from lawsuits, but from economy issues or government confiscation. So money usually is going to stay here. We want privacy, however, so we're going to use a jurisdiction with an underlying company. So the trust has an underlying company. We can do it in the British Virgin Islands or the Isle of Man, but we're usually going to have a company in Nevada or Wyoming. And the bank accounts are going to say with the financial advisors that they're used to having right now. But that company is legally not owned by them. The offshore trust is a separate legal owner, to the point, to a direct question, do you own Golden Mountain Funding of Nevada that has all these accounts? You can say under penalty of perjury, no, you don't. That really comes back to the lawsuit process, which we haven't talked about in this segment. We've talked about it in when you've had me on your show in the past. But plaintiffs really don't get to ask you, where's your money and how much is in those accounts and where are your properties and how much are they worth, until after they have a judgment. It's really about, did you harm me? Did you have a duty of care? And did you breach it? And therefore, the jury or the judge is going to give me a verdict in my favor so I can come and collect $5 million worth of stuff. So you have legal deniability even after that, because after that, for if you don't write a big fat check when you get a judgment against you, they're going to have a debtor's exam. In that debtor's exam, they're going to say, hey, list everything you own. And remember, you're under penalty of perjury, which is lying to the court, not us. That's a felony. Tell us everything you have, what bank accounts you own, and how much is in it. And we're going to go out to Union Bank and Bank of America and collect that money. And we're going to take, you know, do a judicial foreclosure on your real estate. Well, if an irrevocable trust is a separate legal owner under the law, it's not you. That's like Jim or Kevin owning those assets. So you don't list what you don't own, even though you're the beneficiary. And so it's a very powerful strategy. The benefit of offshore is that assets can be removed offshore at the 11th hour. If it just seems like the biggest lawsuit ever and the facts don't look very good for you, but you set up this trust 4 years ago and a new employee or a new person that you hit in the crosswalk or a new person that you know, had a service or product from you that went wrong and damaged them, you can have the trustees you can essentially hand over to the trustees internationally those assets to remove them from U.S. jurisdiction. We've only had clients do that twice out of thousands and thousands of these trusts. Most of the time, in 80% of our legal cases that our clients have faced, 80% of the time, the other side doesn't even know that the structuring exists or is related to our clients.
You know, that's a topic, Kevin. I'd love to have you come back and just do offshore trusts. But as we close, you cover a wide variety of estate planning expertise from offshore trusts, asset protection. If our listeners would like to get a hold of your firm, what's the easiest way to do that?
The best way would probably be the phone, which is 858-755-6672, 858-755-6672. All those that are much younger than me that would rather do it by email, it would be info@trespday.com. That's TRESPDAY.com, trespday.com. And say, I want to learn more about the current gifting or domestic asset protection trusts or offshore. We also do estate freezes. We do divorce proving. We do buy-sell agreements. We do captive insurance company formation and lawsuit protection. We have quite a good billet. We have tax attorneys on board. We also have estate litigators in-house.
All right. Well, listen, as always, Kevin, it's a pleasure having you on the program. All the best, and I hope you come back again.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.